Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today we're going to be discussing iPhone and Windows Phone 7 development with the resident experts from Firefly Logic out of Nashville, Tennessee. They're at www.fireflylogic.com. Daniel, on memory management, which comes up a number of times, are C-sharp developers misleading themselves that memory management is much easier in .NET and is a significant challenge for iPhone developers, or is it in fact a pain point?
I think just from my community of friends, it seems like a very frightening thing. And for an iPhone developer, yes, I have to spend some time thinking about managing memory. But I think also, for an iPhone developer, there are these conventions. I guess going back to Hunter's comment on that, it's not so much a configuration convention, but there are conventions to how you manage memory. So if you kind of follow along with the conventions, when I first got into it, I don't know if it was leaking more than I was just shoveling memory. And now, once I understand the conventions and I understand how to cooperate with the system, I just had far fewer of those experiences. And when I do go back to doing a C-sharp project, there is this little thing in the back of my mind that says, wow, I just allocated all this memory, and now what do I do with it? No, it's out there, it's free, and I'm going to rely on the system to take care of it for me. So I think for an iPhone developer going over to a managed environment, if the iPhone developer is familiar with the Cocoa managed environment, this C-sharp is so much easier to deal with than that. So I think on the whole, the short answer to your question is going from the iPhone thing to C-sharp thing is going to be kind of a painless transition, whereas going from C-sharp to iPhone, you do have to ramp up on how to do that stuff.
I was just going to jump in there, Jesse. On that topic, I don't want iPhone developers to think that you don't have to deal with it, though, because on the Phone 7 app that I'm finishing up right now, I'm actually – that's one of the problems I'm running into is you have to be careful about memory leaks, even in a managed language, if you leave those references. And definitely with the phone, you have that 90 megabyte limit, that you're really not supposed to get above on the phone. And I've been running into that, on one of the apps I'm working on. So, and you have the navigation, you have the things on the navigation stack that are taking up some space. So those are things you have to think about more than you think you would.
Okay, so what you're telling us is that while there is memory management, relying on the garbage collector to come along may be overly optimistic given the low ceiling.
I would say absolutely. And there's no, I haven't found any good profiling tools or that type of thing. So I think a lot of people are rolling their own, things to, dump the visual tree or to see how much memory is being taken.
I will refer you to Jeff Wilcox's blog. He's got a number of postings on perf, and some of that has to do very much with the issues that you're describing, although I'm not sure everything is, all of the resources for that are gathered in one place. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I've definitely been watching his blog a lot lately because of those types of issues. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me take you in a slightly different direction, which is that of the life cycle of the application. And early on, I think it was Brian mentioned tombstoning. Daniel, can you tell us a little bit, or whoever you think is the right person, about the life cycle of an iPhone app and what happens when the iPhone app moves from the foreground to the background, and let's try to get a comparison of that with what happens in Windows Phone 7 and the advantages and disadvantages in each model.
Well, for the iPhone, that's a relatively new thing that came along with multitasking on the iPhone. Was before multitasking, when an app went to the background, that's it, you're dead. You get shut down, you have this very small amount of space to do any type of cleanup with it. With the new multitasking features, there are now hooks baked into the app so that the device can notify the application, hey, I'm about to shut down, and then the application can request from the device, hey, I need a little bit of time to finish up, I've got a URL connection open or something like that, I need to finish this up, or I'm writing out some data right now, or things of that nature. And you can also say request, okay, well, I'm an audio app, say for instance, and so I want to just continue playing in the background while you move on to the next app. So those are the significant features.
Well, I just want to separate those two. One is, let me have some time to close down, but the other is, I'm actually going to keep running even though I'm in the background. And I thought I understood that the only ones that could do the latter were the intrinsic applications, the applications provided by Apple. Do I have that wrong?
Well, no, that's a new thing with it. So now you can do, there's a handful of things that you can do in the background. You know, like there's an audio one, there's a VoIP one, and I'm missing what the third one is, just off the top of my head. But there's three different types of activities that you can continue after the app moves out to the background. So, for instance, Skype, it's not provided by Apple. It's written by independent developers. And when it goes off to the background, I continue my Skype call on it. Another one's Pandora. So that's an audio app. So once it goes in the background, it can continue working. So there are hooks into the system where I can keep the app alive and I can continue doing things from non-Apple apps.
Okay. As opposed to with Windows Phone 7, where the application does have a certain amount of time and is being notified that it's going to be moving into the background and can store its state, but it cannot continue along with audio or any other functionality until it's back in the foreground. You had mentioned that you found some of the tombstoning to be a pain point for you. Could you say a bit more about that?
I would say when I was working heavily in the iPhone things, I was early before the new release that Dan was talking about. So I find that the two are very similar. You're going to find, you get some notifications when things are happening on the phone that are out, they're coming from the outside, like, a phone call coming in or switching apps. So that's going to be pretty familiar. It's going to be, different event structure, but it's going to be very familiar there. On the tombstoning side, that stuff is still, even in the very latest releases of the tools, they made some changes there. Initially, all the choosers and launchers, which are things like, I might go to the camera to take a picture or choose a photo, that kind of thing, that would always cause your app to tombstone. Recently, they made a change where that's not always the case, and that changes something. So other than the fact that it's still even just a few drops of the tools ago, that was changing a little bit. It's pretty familiar. I don't think the concepts are very similar. I don't remember thinking this is a complete departure from what we were doing on the iPhone.
Okay. So it sounds like there's no huge loss there where an iPhone developer would have to say, I have to really rethink the way I do my application now. So
right.
Let me bring you all to a final topic that's of huge interest to me, which is whether you're using MVVM or MVC, it is essentially, and you'll pardon my simplifying it this much, but at a first approximation, it's an N-tier approach where you have your presentation tier, your business logic, and your data. And that's more wrong than it's right, but for purposes of this conversation, let me go with that and ask, is it possible to create an application where the model doesn't change, where the controller / view model doesn't change or changes very little, and all you're changing is the view aspect, and so building for both platforms becomes economically much more comfortable?
Well, certainly, and we have on many clients that come to us looking for applications, that's a question that comes up certainly more than once, is how do I invest in an iPhone app and an Android app and a Windows Phone app, and we even have BlackBerry, things like that. I think in most spirit, Jesse, I agree with you. If there's, if you have a utility app where I'm, getting and receiving data, say for instance from, I'm making something up here, this isn't a real client, so it's like a real estate, something like that. So I'm talking back and forth to my agent or something like that. So, the business logic and the flow and the data, the model, all that stuff, I totally agree with you. I think you can keep that consistent. But, where I start to cringe is where we want to use, and this isn't because I want to follow some type of, Apple party line or anything like that, but where I want to use some tool that can you know, generate out the same exact app for the iPhone and Android and Windows Phone 7. And I say that because, you know, maybe going back to, you know, look and feel tough in this Metro thing. I mean, Metro looks really nice on an iPhone or on a Windows Phone. And there's ways to interact with the Windows Phone controls that are different than an iPhone. And Android is the same way. It just works a little bit differently. So, you know, the apps that I have that I've interacted with that I can tell that these things were written so that they would look identical on an Android and on an iPhone, I think they look identically bad.
Yes, I think very few people who have been doing this for a length of time would argue that the view itself should be the same. You know, when if you think about Silverlight, when Silverlight first came out, one of the major selling points to the Apple community was that you were not going to have what looked like a Windows application running on a mm-hmm. Mac. The technical term for doing that is it sucks. So I think the view is clearly separate. And the model is clearly preservable. I think the key question is in between how much of what's in the controller and how much what's in the view model, given that they work from different mindsets around binding and so forth, how much of that is preservable and how much does it matter?
I think the question there would be, one question anyway that I'm thinking of is, do the controllers move you around to the same things? And that might be a question to ask per app.
Okay.
Jesse, I would say that where the reuse is going to happen is most often going to be back another level and back at like a web service layer. And not, I think it would be tricky to get that reuse at the controllers. But if you're clever, you know, there's a lot of good, and a lot of these, you know, I tend to think of these a lot of the times as just fancy flat clients, and that controller code, you know, still I think is gonna be fairly specific to each one. But then you go back one level from that, and that's where I think you get the reuse, where, you know, whatever there's a couple of different tools out there that are letting things be reused on the platforms themselves. I don't have a lot of experience with them yet, but I'm hearing about them where you might get things like, you know, I think there's a Mono project where there's, you know, where you can move some of this stuff around, where you get some reuse of some services and things like that. But I suspect that getting it all the way up to the controllers is probably tricky. But, you know, just because we haven't done it doesn't mean it can't be done.
Well, and Sean might be able to speak to reusing web services across apps, considering, you know, he's working on an app right now that has a web service that's already exposed to an iPhone client, and he's consuming that service on a Windows Phone client. So I'd be interested in his input on that aspect of it.
Well, yeah, I would definitely say that that's where you get the savings, right? At the service layer, you push as much of that as you can behind the service, and you just make, you know, dumb front ends. It doesn't always work that, you know, that well, and you're definitely gonna still take some time to you know, make platforms. And on the app I'm working with now, the services were originally built for iPhone, so I just wrap those services in a layer and you know, use my view models, use my views, and you know, try to build a nice looking WinPhone 7 app on top of those services originally built for an iPhone app, and it's worked out well so far.
Sean, is there? I'm sorry if I'm jumping in with questions.
Please do. As I say, it's a discussion.
Are there things inside of the data you're getting back from those web services? Is there stuff in there that feels like they are maybe misplaced navigation drivers or something like that? So the service is communicating up to an iPhone saying, okay, you were doing this, now I want you to do that. And when you get that information, you either ignore it or transform it or something, because it just doesn't make sense on your side.
I don't know if there's much specific to iPhone, but I mean, you do run into things where, you know, clients embed HTML and things like that, and they're expected to be rendered a certain way that don't necessarily fit with a Metro theme. So, you know, there's definitely some rework there. But for the most part, I mean, you know, data is data, and it's been pretty seamless.
But you might, so that's a perfect example. So you're going to get some HTML that's supposed to fit nice on an iPhone, but it just doesn't fit on a Windows phone. Or you might get images back that are a certain size. It looks nice on an iPhone, but they're just not the right size for you. So there's some kind of adaption type stuff that you'd have to do.
Yeah, and some of that is how the client originally, built the service. It was built for the iPhone client, so they didn't really think that far in the future. So say for instance, the iPhone background is white, so the images returned don't have transparent backgrounds. They just have, they're built on white backgrounds. So you run into, things like that that cause you problems.
Then let me jump in and ask you this, which is if I am an iPhone developer and I've got either a successful app or an app that I think should be successful but hasn't quite hit it yet, and I'm working in a relatively small team. What I read is the vast majority of iPhone development is being done by teams of five or fewer. So resources are important to me. Am I smart to extend my application to Windows Phone 7? Is that something I should be thinking about today, or is that something that I should be putting off for 6 months or a year to see how things play out?
Oh, I think if you're – well, and I know this from actual experience from a client that we have here in town, getting into the iPhone App Store right off the bat was a huge boon for them. And that – it stands for a whole great deal of their success where, the space that they're in, at the time they got on the iPhone App Store, there was a handful of competitors. And now, there's – who knows how many – there's probably thousands of people written the same type of thing. But, my client is known for this. They're one of the top apps that you're going to download for, the particular thing that they're doing. So, and I think that's, an iPhone developer recognizes that. We all know that. The people that got on the App Store first had a huge leg up. So I would say the same exact thing for the Windows marketplace. If you can get in that marketplace first is almost better than better.
But if you're an iPhone developer and you have limited resources and your choice is, well, I can put those resources against my next iteration and end features, or I could do my next iteration with somewhat fewer features but also get into WinPhone 7, what's your advice then?
Well, that's your decreasing return on investment. If you have this really killer new feature that you're going to put into your iPhone, I think measure, well, how many new customers, how many new sales does that translate into? And then just, do the math on that and say, okay, if I have a limited feature set but move over into other platforms, how many new customers and new sales does that translate into?
And Chris and Brian, is it obvious to you that if you're an iPhone developer and you're looking for a second environment that it is WinPhone 7, or is that an open question?
Well, I'd hate to leave Android out of the conversation, but I think if you're looking for one that's going to be I think it's probably going to be the easiest one to move to. It's just as some of the things that Dan was talking about, some of the memory management things. I think it probably, if you're going to take on a second one and you can only choose one, it's definitely should be in your thought process. But Android, Android's also fairly straightforward if you've done any Java things at all. I think all these things would depend on your product and your team and what they're, if all those kinds of things would come into play. And also, like Brian mentioned earlier, there's some things that are missing from the Windows Phone that might be really important. Most of the things are there for you to do most things, but if you have an app that's requires access to some of those hardware bits that aren't available to us yet, that might play into it as well.
Well, that sounds like a really good place to leave it.